thank you, Blessing and Jonga. Good evening, Zimbabwe. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Friday, March 28th, 2014. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Sandra Nyaira.
And I'm Chris Gande.
Studio 7 is going out to you on 909 medium wave and on 4930, 5940 and 15455 shortwave frequencies.
On the internet, find us at www.studio7news.com. Text us at 001-202-465-0318.
Here are our top stories this evening.
Officials say President Robert Mugabe will boycott the EU-Africa summit in Brussels next week after the bloc denied his wife Grace a visa.
The International Monetary Fund paints a gloomy economic outlook for Zimbabwe, but promises a resident representative to enhance interactions with Harare.
And 47 student activists are behind bars following a police swoop yesterday as they discussed plans to elect new student representatives for Bindura University.
Senior officials in the Foreign Affairs Ministry say President Robert Mugabe will not attend the EU-Africa summit after the bloc denied his wife Grace a visa to Brussels. The summit, scheduled to take place between April 2 and 3, is hanging in the balance as Africa threatens to boycott over the EU's decision to overlook some countries and invite, for example, Egypt, which is under African Union suspension. Foreign Affairs Minister Simbarashe Mbengegui, according to the officials, will make the formal announcement.
Apart from Zimbabwe's protest over the visa, the EU and the African Union are also wrangling over Morocco and the exclusion of Sudanese leader Omar al-Bashir, the Sahrawi Republic and Eritrea. EU ambassador to Zimbabwe Aldo Del Riccia told Studio 7 that a high-level delegation of Africa and the EU is meeting to find common ground. He says more than 40 African leaders have confirmed participation in the summit, further isolating Zimbabwe. International relations expert Clifford Mashiri, a former Zimbabwe diplomat in Ethiopia, tells Studio 7's Blessing Zulu that the issue of Mrs. Mugabe's visa must not derail the summit.
This is the result of the EU having capitulated to Mugabe and probably being, you know, enticed by diamonds to the point that they accepted Mugabe despite the tampering with the polls. So now they are in a very awkward situation. The EU is in an uncomfortable situation whereby they agreed to take Mugabe as the head of the African Union despite all the imperfections of how he came to power, which is regarded as illegitimate. So now they are stuck with him. He says he wants a visa for his wife.
But should Zimbabwe boycott such a summit because the First Lady is not going?
No, not necessarily. In fact, it was a privilege. They would not have been invited had they not succeeded in convincing the African Union that Mugabe could become their vice chair or some kind of a chairperson. Otherwise, Mugabe is on the sanctions list. The only privilege that he was enjoying now was that it was at the discretion of the European Union, but it did not include the invitation of spouses. They excluded spouses because they felt there was no business for spouses. And if the European Union sticks to its guns, that should remain the policy. Because if they swerve, that it will mean they have to invite all the other spouses of these African heads of state.
Lastly, let's look at Zimbabwe's delegation that was bound to go 70. What is your take on this?
Well, that's actually the sign of the abuse of the whole system or the facility. This is how they have always benefited from these, foreign travel, in the guise of accompanying, Mugabe abroad. These people have no business, would not have had anything to do officially and beneficial to both Zimbabwe as well as the European Union. These people are likely to have gone there as hangers-on, shopping. They are getting rewards for ensuring Mugabe wins every election in inverted commas.
And that was international relations expert Clifford Mashiri, a former Zimbabwe diplomat in Ethiopia, speaking with Studio 7's Blessing Zulu from London.
Meanwhile, the International Monetary Fund has painted a gloomy economic outlook for Zimbabwe this year, but has promised to place a resident representative in Harare to enhance interactions with the government. In a press statement released at the end of an IMF delegation's visit to Harare, under Article 4 consultations, the lender of last resort says the macroeconomic environment in Zimbabwe is expected to remain challenging in 2014, adding the continued moderate growth is, however, expected. The IMF says the full growth potential in Zimbabwe over the medium term depends on Harare pursuing strong macroeconomic policies and implementing structural reforms to foster investment, improve the country's business climate, and strengthen governance and institutions. The IMF also calls on Harare to increase the transparency in the mining and marketing of the country's mineral wealth.
The IMF also urged Harare to engage the country's creditors to find a solution to Harare's long-standing debt arrears. But Finance Minister Patrick Chinamasa says Zimbabwe will miss targets set under the IMF Staff Monitored Program, or SMP. Harare is failing to meet key benchmarks such as reducing the government's wage bill. An SMP is an informal agreement between a country and fund staff where the latter agree to monitor the implementation of the authority's economic program. SMPs do not entail financial assistance or endorsement by the MF Executive Board. Economist Godfrey Kanyenze of the Labour and Economic Development Research Institute tells Studio 7's Blessing Zulu that the economic situation is indeed worsening.
Is the rather cautious tone of the North. One would have expected the current visit, especially as it comes after the one that was done around October, to be a bit more serious in terms of bringing out the realities on the ground, the very fact that government is failing to pay salaries, the very fact that the liquidity challenge has really deepened, and Zimbabwe is basically in a deflation. I think those aspects are not coming out the way they should be coming out. You know, when they are saying we need to engage with respect to minimizing or mitigating the risk factors, especially emanating from declining commodity prices, etc., I think they need to be a bit much firmer in basically identifying what they agreed with the authorities in terms of how to basically restructure the economy. The key thing is no longer just about watching things that are taking place, the decline in commodity prices, the warning of rebound effects on the economy, etc. But rather, basically, they should be insisting on and agreeing with government on active policy reforms.
The IMF also said in its statement that it is going to place a resident representative in Harare in the coming months to enhance its interactions with Zimbabwe. How significant is this?
Well, it is significant, and it was expected in the sense that given that Zimbabwe is signed onto a staff monitored program, which is the basis for arrears clearance and debt resolution, which is the basis for re-engaging the country, not on the part of the IMF, but because also other creditors and also multilateral partners take a cue from what the IMF is doing. Therefore, as the lead agency in this re-engagement process, it will be very critical of them that they have an office in Harare.
Economist Godfrey Kanyenze of the Labour and Economic Development Research Institute of Zimbabwe on the line from Harare with Studio 7's Blessing Zulu.
Dozens of student activists are in police custody in Mashonaland and Central following their arrest at Bindura State University yesterday. Thomas Chiripasi has more details.
Secretary General Obey Stole of the Zimbabwe National Students Union, or ZINASU, says more than 100 students gathered at Bindura State University yesterday to discuss pending elections to choose a student's representative council at the learning institution, but the meeting was cut short by police details who arrested 47 of them. Stole told Studio 7 by phone that those arrested were being detained at Bindura Central Station.
Okay, we received the news that there are 47 students at Bindura University of Science and Technology which were arrested, after gathering for a meeting discussing issues pertaining to bread and butter, which are affecting the students at Bindura University of Science and Technology. as we know that all these institutions are putting on various measures to restrict and silence the voices of the students. So after gathering, they were arrested while in the process of discussing issues to do with their lives as students at their institution.
The students' leader said their arrested colleagues have been charged under the Public Order and Security Act for convening a meeting without permission from regulatory authorities.
Okay, as usual, they are being accused of an unlawful gathering. They are being said to have gathered without permission, which is required for any gathering to take place.
Zinasu says Stole is unhappy with police action, adding that the arrest of the student activists in Bindura yesterday was the clearest indication that the state is not retreating in its onslaught against perceived state enemies. Stole said the arrest of the 47 students was caught an attack on academic freedoms.
As a student leader, I personally and as enough, we totally condemn, utterly condemn such treatment being imposed upon the students of Zimbabwe. We are suffering and really need to address our issues without the interference of anyone. After all, it is a constitutional right to stand and discuss the issues. Everyone is entitled to freedom of expression, freedom of choice. So we totally condemn the arbitrary arrest of students. On whatever case, on whatever platform, we totally condemn the arrest of students. Allow the students their freedom to address their issues at any given moment.
The arrest comes at a time when Zinasu has embarked on an exercise to strengthen its structures in all learning institutions. National Police spokesperson Charity Charamba said she first wanted to investigate the matter before giving the official statement. Reporting for Studio 7 from Harare, this is Thomas Chiripasi.
An unlicensed truck driver who admitted to culpable homicide and driving without a license after he knocked and killed Bulawayo's alderman Charles Mpofu a few weeks ago was today sentenced to 18 months in prison. Trust Lupondo had pleaded for a lighter sentence in mitigation, telling the magistrate he was forced to get behind the wheel by his boss even though he knew he was unlicensed. But Bulawayo magistrate handed him 6 months for driving without a license and 12 months for culpable homicide. His lawyer, Mordecai Donga, however, tells Studio 7 he is appealing the sentence.
The first count was that of contravening Section 61 of the Road Traffic Act, driving with license. For that count, he was sentenced 6 months. And then for the second count, which is culpable homicide, is defined in Section 49 of the Criminal Law, Codification and Reform Act, he was sentenced to 12 months. So that in effect means that you have 18 months effective murder. We are supposed to appeal only against sentence because, remember, he pleaded guilty, so he can't appeal against conviction. So we're going to appeal only against sentence. We're meeting with his family on Tuesday after we make our appeal, which we believe that would have done before the end of next week.
Lawyer Mordecai Donga representing unlicensed Alderman Charles Mpofu killer driver Trust Lupondo.
You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America in Washington.
We are broadcasting on 909 medium wave and on the 4930, 5940 and 15455 shortwave frequencies.
Coming up,
Zifa elections stir debate and interest.
But first, a look at world and regional news.
U.S. President Barack Obama is meeting today in Saudi Arabia with King Abdullah to address their differences over security interests across the Middle East. Their meeting outside the Saudi capital, Riyadh, was expected to focus mostly on tensions spawned by Syria's civil war and Iran's nuclear program.
Health officials in Guinea are on high alert after four cases of Ebola turned up in Conakry, the capital city that is home to at least 2 million people. Guinea's health ministry says the four new cases involve people who are believed to have had contact with the body of an earlier victim.
And officials in the Central African Republic say a grenade attack on a funeral ceremony has killed 20 people and left another 11 wounded. The attack occurred at about 11 p.m. Thursday night, local time, in Fatima, a Muslim neighborhood of the capital, Bangui. The Ministry of Agriculture, Mechanization and Irrigation Development says there's an outbreak of tick-borne diseases in Matabeleland, Mashonaland West and Mashonaland Central that has led to the deaths of more than 300 cattle over the past few months. According to the first-round crop and livestock assessment report released by the ministry yesterday, the affected districts are now under quarantine. Manicaland, Maswingo and Midlands provinces also experienced outbreaks, but to a less extent. The livestock is reported to be succumbing to various diseases that include lumpy skin and back leg. Zimbabwe's national herd, that was more than 5 million before the land reform program, is now estimated to have gone down to around 1.5 million. Efforts to restock have been hampered by lack of funds. Although the report attributes the cattle deaths to a shortage of dipping chemicals, an agronomist, Mandla Nkomo, tells Studio 7 that chemicals are not in short supply. He says what is lacking is veterinary expertise because of brain drain.
Well, Chris, what that is pointing to is that, you know, the system is breaking down. Because in a normal scenario, you should be getting, you know, regular vaccination, regular dipping, and also dosing of the cattle. And that requires a functioning, you know, state veterinary service, and also people being able to access the right kind of medication for their own cattle. Now, because the system has broken down, that has resulted in a situation where the level of immunity in the herd in the country is so low, and what that does is that when it starts raining like it has done in the last few months, your level of disease pressure increases on an animal population that is not adequately prepared to handle that. And I think that's why we are seeing the losses that we are seeing in the livestock sector.
And what about the situation regarding medicine to cure this cattle? We understand there's quite an improvement. Can you tell us what you think is the problem when there's that kind of improvement?
No, you're quite right. I mean, when I look around, cities like Bulawayo, Gwanda, and so forth, there's definitely a proliferation of people selling veterinary medications and other things. However, the medication on its own is never going to be sufficient if you don't have the personnel to provide the advisory services. So my view is that while there's a proliferation of sources to purchase medicine, there isn't a sufficient base of advisory services to support that.
Mandla Nkomo is an agronomist. He spoke to Studio 7 on the line from Lagos, Nigeria.
Meanwhile, still with health, but now this time not of cattle, but human beings. The health ministry yesterday belatedly marked World Tuberculosis Day to raise awareness that the disease remains an epidemic in the country. The day was celebrated internationally on Monday. Officiating at the commemorations in Chitungwiza, Health Minister Dr. David Parenyatwa said there was need for an intensified tuberculosis awareness program, encouraging early diagnosis and treatment. Mavla Simtlanganya, who here spoke with Deputy Director Dr. Charles Sendi of the HIV AIDS and TB unit in the Health Ministry, who says the government is working on introducing more testing centers around the country.
The minister's focus in his speech was to emphasize the need to provide a lot of health education, a lot of information, so that patients and the community become more aware and become more conversant with what is related to TB. He also emphasized on the need to ensure that for all our TB cases or patients or clients, we have to provide HIV testing and also ensure that they are initiated on antiretroviral therapy timely. That was the main gist of his speech, and the focus was mainly to try to catch those missing cases. We suspect that annually perhaps we have something like 30,000 missing cases, and those cases might be responsible for the continued spread of infection.
That was Deputy Director of the HIV, AIDS and TB Unit in the Health Ministry, Dr. Chau Sendi, speaking with Studio 7's Mavelas Mtlanganyahuye in Harare. The MDC formation of former Prime Minister Morgan Tsvangirai is tomorrow expected to rally its supporters in Jombe in Midlands North as it seeks to energize and galvanize its support base following massive fallouts over the leadership renewal debate. Party President Morgan Tsvangirai is expected to speak on the need for unity within the party, taking the opportunity to invite back members who had left the party over various issues. The rally follows unity pronouncements by Tsvangirai this week that there is now unity in the party and consensus following the leadership renewal calls, suspensions, and intra-party violence. Party spokesman Douglas Munzora says Party Secretary General Tendai Biti, who is linked to the renewal call, will also attend the rally on Saturday. Studio 7 failed to reach Biti to check whether he is going to attend the rally or not, but Munzora speaks with Jonga Kandemiri.
We are going to have one of our mega rallies at Jom in Midlands North. As part of our efforts to galvanize and energize the base, our president is moving with the theme that we must unite the party, we must unite the country, we must unite the democratic forces so that we forge a formidable front against the dictatorship. It is clear that ZANU-PF is clueless about running the economy. 8 months after the elections, the people of Zimbabwe are living in poverty and misery, and there is absolutely no hope. We realize that the MDC holds the hope of the people of Zimbabwe, and we are moving in order to strengthen the MDC as a change agent, to strengthen the MDC as the alternative. And our president is moving with that theme of unity. We are also moving with the theme of telling the people of Zimbabwe what the MDC will do for them come winning the next elections. We are talking about employment. We are talking about upliftment of the Zimbabweans. We are talking about reindustrialization of Zimbabwe. We are talking about making Zimbabwe great again. This is what we are moving with.
Is Mr. Biti going to attend?
We are expecting everyone to be there. We are expecting all the senior leaders to be there to give support to this very important cause, to this very important crusade by our president. We are expecting the senior leaders to be there. But of course, there may be other reasons why people may not attend. They may be committed elsewhere, but we are expecting everybody to be there.
That was MDCT spokesman Douglas Munzora on the line with Studio 7 reporter Jonga Kandemiri from Harare. Meanwhile, suspended Deputy Treasurer General Elton Mangoma's lawyer, Jacob Mafumi, says he will file papers opposing his client's suspension from the party at the High Court next week.
We had hoped that by now the party would have reversed the proposed decision, but it appears that there are some in the party who are holding on to that process, which was unconstitutional, unprocedural, and it was a legal nullity from the start. So we are going to approach the court so that that issue can be dealt with once for all. The party needs to be discussing the issue about how does it plan to deal with the 2018, under what leadership will it tackle 2018, what tactics will it use to tackle 2018, and also how will it deal with the current problems in the country, the economy, the collapsing issues. There is no money in this country. So therefore, we want to quickly deal with the issue of the leadership so that we will be able to go about the business of helping the people of Zimbabwe who are suffering.
When are you expected to go to the courts?
We will be in court Monday latest.
That was a suspended MDCT Deputy Treasurer General Elton Mangoma's lawyer, Jacob Mafumi.
Organizers of the Inxusa Festival, which began Tuesday this week at Amakhosi Cultural Center in Bulawayo, say the celebrations ended on a high note this evening with performers from state universities and colleges around the country and African region showcasing their skills in various performances. The festival runs under the theme Merging Cultures. Amakhosi Cultural Center Director Konde Mhlanga says the occasion, which was suspended in 1999 due to economic hardships and relaunched Tuesday, was graced by Deputy Minister of Information, Media and Broadcasting Services Super Mandiwanzira and various artists. Mhlanga tells reporter Sithandekile Mhlanga he raised the issue of prioritizing local content in the country and the need to address marginalization of artists from Bulawayo and Matabeleland regions.
As it is, the region is being treated secondary, you know, like let's assist them, let's also play them, let's create a music chart for those that come from Matabeleland. It's important to open airwaves, it's important to create metro stations, to create community stations that can give equal attention to the work and the content and the culture coming out of the local region. As it is, nothing has changed. Yes, we've seen two new more radio stations being added, but it's the same. They're all headquartered in Harare, and therefore they're prioritizing content and everything from Harare. And if they're going out of Harare, they're doing it out of pity, not because it's an obligation that they should do that.
Did you raise this issue with the deputy minister?
Yes, we did. Yeah, we raised that, and we took him around on the tour of Amakhosi Cultural Center, and we told him that we have applied for a license, and this bus licenses us. We took him on a tour where we would like the radio station to be stationed, where we would like to broadcast from, and gave him the vision, what we call Amakhosi Vision 2025, which is the reason why he had to plant a tree for it. And now for us is to engage Buzz and engage the community to help put pressure that licensing doesn't fall away, and that we make sure that there is a metro channel in the region, and that our arts can get 100% attention.
That was Konde Mhlanga, director of Amakhosi Cultural Center, on the line from Bulawayo.
And in sports news, the Zifa Council is under heavy scrutiny in tomorrow's Zifa's presidential elections following corruption that has dogged the past polls. Reporter Michael Kariati has details.
The elections will be the first real big test for Zimbabwean football democracy, as all eyes will be on the goings on. The polls come after the Parliamentary Portfolio Committee on Sports, Arts and Culture was told of the widespread corruption that has characterized past Zifa elections. It has been argued that since 1980, Zifa only had proper elections before and during the era of the late Nelson Chirwa, and never since then had the football controlling body held credible elections. Instead, the football family has been accused of falling prey to the habit of choosing candidates on the basis of who is allegedly paying more, while competent candidates capable of bringing fresh life into football have been sidelined and consigned to oblivion. From Trevor Kelsey Joe in 1992 and to Cuthbert Dube in 2010, via the likes of Leo Mugabe, Vincent Pamire, Wellington Nyatanga and Rafiki Khan, the story of alleged vote-buying has persisted. With incumbent Cuthbert Dube, Harare City Chairman Leslie Gwindi, Zifa Board Member Marketing Nigel Mnyati and former Zifa Chairman Trevor Kelsey Joe lining up for the Zifa presidency, Zifa councillors have been urged to abandon the money syndrome and choose the right men for the game of football. Highlander supporter Daniel Chitimbe says football will be the loser should the Zifa councillors repeat the old system.
The corruption has destroyed our game of football. The councillors should vote for the right person instead of voting for man.
The Zifa Council, which is drawn from members within all the structures of the Zimbabwean Football Association, elects the Zifa board. In the past, the Zifa Council had 36 members, but they've been increased to 58, with the Premier Soccer League now having 16 votes instead of 6. Former Premier Soccer League Chief Executive Officer Chris Sambo says as long as some of the old influential Zifa Council members are still part of the electoral process, the...
Thank you, Michael. Unfortunately, time is not on our side. That's what all we had for you tonight. Please remember to stay tuned for Live Talk, where we'll be discussing the EU-Africa Summit and President Robert Mugabe's boycott.